Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Conti's Law. I'm your host, Attorney Michelle Conti. And at Conti Law, we consider us your legal concierge and can be reached at 724-784-0239. I was recently asked, what does that mean? Well, like any concierge, we're here for you. So questions, concerns you may have, or if you need our opinion, I'm asked that quite frequently. I need an attorney who does X, and just because I don't handle it doesn't mean I can't point you in the right direction. Or I need an advisor. I need an accountant. I'm looking for so-and-so. We've been doing this long enough where we pride ourselves in making those recommendations to the professionals that we ourselves would use. So keep that in mind, and I hope that answers your question. What does legal concierge mean? Exactly that. So I spent a great deal of time with my family over the holidays, and a story was brought up, and of course I have little kids, so they got a kick out of it. But I remember when I was young, growing up, my mom is a huge, both of my parents, huge lovers of music. And so we sang a lot. Music was always playing in our house. Until still to this day, we have it playing. And we tried to incorporate that in our kids' lives. But the song that we were singing, that I recall singing as a child, was a Beatles song. Will You Still Need Me? Will You Still Feed Me When I'm 64? I had no clue what that meant when I was little. You figure Paul McCartney wrote that, sang it. I shouldn't say, I don't know if he wrote it. Sang those words when he was in his, what, 20s, 30s? Well, now my parents have surpassed that age. And so we were singing that for my kids. And of course, 64 to my four-year-olds is old. But the older I get, it's not that old. But it deals with the age-old question that Paul McCartney sang about years and years and years ago, that I sang about when I was a kid and had no idea what its meaning was. But it is a question, a serious one at that. Asking what happens to us as we grow older. Who's going to take care of us? I pause because I don't think 64 is old. But some people do. Some people need help. They're not able to take care of themselves. What legal tools are available to help you plan for the future? The older we get, what happens if we not only lose our hair, but if we start to lose our cognitive abilities and are unable to take care of ourselves? The best laid out plan, at least for my clients, is having this open discussion. Let's have a family meeting. What happens if mom and dad can't take care of themselves? Will the kids do it? Will they go into a home? Do they have enough money to go into a home? Will a sibling take care of them? Are they young enough that they'll live with their parents? I've seen that happen as well. And I say this every time, it's not fun. Nobody wants to talk about what happens if. It's not the inevitable because it doesn't affect everybody. Not everybody goes through the same circumstances. But what if? An unexpected illness. What if you lose the ability to care for yourself? What if you can't make those important decisions for yourself? What happens? I tell people one of the best things to do is to have a plan. Sit down and let's talk about it. Let's figure out as a group. You don't want to throw this on your family at the 11th hour and say, well, who's taking dad? Who's taking them now? And I know from personal experience. Now, my grandparents are all deceased. However, my mother's mother She and her husband lived in their home. And my grandfather, when he went into a nursing home with dementia, because she was unable to take care of him, she lasted a couple years by herself. And then she couldn't manage living alone, managing her affairs. She has five kids. Not all of them live here. At the time, my parents did. And so my mother and her older sister made the decision. She'll live with us for 6 months. She'll live with you for 6 months. If you need her to stay here, we have the ability to do that. And vice versa. And they visited, and they visited often. And then when my parents moved to Florida, I still remember my husband Jason and I taking my grandma through the airport in her wheelchair. And I was so excited. Not only was my grandma going to see my parents' new home, but we got to bypass security because she was in a wheelchair. And that sounds terrible, but it was great. We got to wheel her up. She had a blast. We took her on. We took her down to Florida. She stayed there for, I don't even know, 6 months probably. And then we flew her back down, got her, brought her back up, took her to my aunt's house. They went down. It was a nice thing. That's how she got to enjoy the end of her life. She didn't have to worry about any of this. She had her kids around her. She had the kids who stepped up and took care of her. And then the other ones helped in other ways. Not to say they didn't help, but it was, who's going to take care of mom so she doesn't have to go into a nursing home? That may not be your ultimate goal, but I hear it a lot. How do I take care of myself? How do I sustain my stuff, my finances, so that if I need to go into a home, I'm not a burden to somebody else? These are things we need to consider and talk about. And if that situation arises, be able to handle it. Do you have the legal documents in place? You should. And if you don't, this is where we come in and we work with you to make sure that all of that is set up in advance. I always recommend having a durable power of attorney for finance, designating someone to take over your financial affairs if you are unable to deal with them yourself. That person, just like my parents and my aunt and uncle, can step in and pay your bills, manage your accounts, even buy and sell property. So in the case where my grandmother lived in a house she couldn't take care of anymore, now she was of sound mind, but if she wasn't, that document would allow my mom or her other daughter, whomever you name, to sell that house for you. My second recommendation is we should all have should have medical powers of attorney in place. Again, you're appointing somebody who you trust to follow the directions in your living will. So the living will is also known as the advanced directive, where you spell out your end of life wishes. Do you want the doctors to do everything in their power to keep you alive no matter what? No matter the cost, no matter the risk. Then you say that, and you can state that. Do you just want to be kept comfortable and free of pain? You can state that as well. If you make these decisions now, it means that your family members don't have to make them down the road. And I'll tell you, I had a very serious talk with my grandmother when she was still able. And she was cognitive. She was fine. She had capacity up until the day she passed. But this is what I do. And so I talked to her and I said, what do you want to happen? God forbid that day comes. What do you want to happen? Do you want the doctors to do everything in their power to keep you alive? No matter. Do you want surgery? Do you want cardiac resuscitation, mechanical respiration, antibiotics, surgery, blood products? Do you want those things? And I think having that frank conversation actually opens up the dialogue and allows everybody to be on the same page. Now, in my grandmother's situation, everybody was on the same page. But let's play devil's advocate. If she would have said to me, oh, no, Michelle, just let the kids make those decisions, which is inevitably what would happen if you don't make those decisions for yourself, then your medical power of attorney, not only can they talk with the doctors and get updates on your care and your health status and all of that, but they ultimately will make your end-of-life decision for you if you don't make one for yourself. So let's play devil's advocate and say, my grandmother appointed me as the healthcare power of attorney, but didn't tell me what she wanted. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. It comes down to the verbiage in the document. If that document says my agent has the authority and the ability to do whatever they want, to make whatever decision they're comfortable with, then that's what happens. What if you don't have a medical power of attorney in place? What then? In my grandma's situation, she has 5 kids. Do you think all 5 of them would have agreed? I can tell you, I know for certain they wouldn't have. And I'll tell you why. No one wants to see their parent die. And you're going to have a difference of opinion. Do you allow them to stay on a machine? Because, and even though it's selfish, it's what happens. We want them here. We don't want them to pass. I don't blame you. Or do we step up and say, let's let them pass away with dignity and let them go? Or is there a child who knows something the others don't know? Mom wanted this. Mom did not want this. This is why it's so important to have these documents in place. This is where the battling between siblings and loved ones occurs. Now, I have a very clear-cut opinion on this. Not that it's right, not that it's wrong, but it's my opinion. I know what I want to happen to me. My whole family knows what. If something happens to me, this is what you do. And it's very much spelled out in my documents. Other people don't do that. And I had a conversation with my parents before they completed their documents. And I said to them, look, if you don't tell us what you want to happen, now there's only 2 of us, my brother Scott and I, we'll make that determination and we're very much on the same page as to what happens. But it's emotional, right? I'm going to be grieving the loss of my mother. Or father, but I always wonder, even if you don't admit it, did I do the right thing? Did I try hard enough? Would they have agreed with my decision? These are burdensome questions that your loved ones may live with for the rest of their lives. I started giving the example. I talked with my grandmother and I said to her, what do you want to happen? And she said, I want to go to heaven with Pup. I want to die with dignity and grace. Let me go. Now, everybody knew that that's what she wanted. But if they didn't, I know darn well, out of her kids, that question, did I do the right thing? Did I do what Mom wanted me to do? Would literally be burning in their mind the rest of their lives. And my grandmother gave them the gift of not having to make that decision. Now, I know every situation's different. Things happen suddenly. But when we have the time to sit down and plan what we want, why not take that burden off of our loved ones? At the end of the day, the goal is not for them to bicker and fight. We don't want that to happen. It could happen. We don't want that. But why not take that burden, that potential guilt away from them? So let's talk about the person you're naming as your medical power of attorney ultimately will make your end of life decisions that you designate in your living will. What about your financial power of attorney? The person with the financial power of attorney are limited, obviously, to making those financial decisions. They're only dealing with your assets. I would hate to see your financial power of attorney's hands tied because you have a joint document stating that your financial agent can't act until two doctors agree and put it in writing that you're incapacitated. We don't want one of those. But these are things to think about. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Conti's Law. I'm your host, Attorney Michelle Conti, where we focus on estate planning, estate administration, elder law, tax consequences, the things that are certain to happen with you and me at some point in our life. If any of these examples, stories, situations hit home, give us a call. 724-784-0239. I'd love to hear from you. All of our consultations are complimentary. They could be in our office in Moon. They could be at your home. They could be at the hospital facility, at your kid's house, whatever you feel comfortable with. I've had meetings in advisors' offices. You want to make sure that you're comfortable because planning for the future, planning for death, planning for illness. It necessitates that we put a plan in place, long-term planning, regardless if that's long-term in your home, in a facility. We want to make sure everybody's on the same page. And you can look at our stories, read them, take a glimpse at what we deal with. Our website is www.contilawpgh.com. And I'll repeat our contact information before the end of our show. Everything we talk about is difficult. It's difficult to think about. And I'm the first person to say, nobody wants to discuss this. Procrastination is the biggest enemy of proper estate planning. But my job is to make sure that what you've worked your whole lives for, or if you're single or a widow, your whole life, what you've worked for, should be distributed upon your death, to whom you want it to go to. If you need long-term care, let's plan for that. Everything that we talk about is difficult. But it's imperative that you do think about it, that you revisit your estate plan. People ask me, how often should I review my estate plan? Look at them. Read them. What does your estate plan say? Does what you want that's written in those documents still apply? Are they still consistent with your wishes? Have you had a life event, a life-changing event? So things that could impact your estate plan. Is there a change in your health? So over time, our health always changes, right? It can get bad, it can get better, get worse, it can get better. Doctors do a lot. But nobody knows when it will be our time. If you ever lose the ability to update your estate plan, then your family might be stuck with what you already have. And unless going to court and having the court, or attempting to have the court to change it, there may be little that can be done with it. What about changes in your assets? Over time, our assets change. Hopefully, they increase. Sometimes they go down. Those fluctuations in your estate plan can really change the way it works. But it's important that you know what you have. Take periodic stock of those assets. Inventory them. How are they titled? Are they properly titled? Are there beneficiaries on those accounts? Do you have a revocable trust? Has your trust been funded? I'm shocked at the number of people who come to my office who call and say, I have a trust. I want you to look at it. And I'll review that document for you. And at most of the time, there may be a couple of tweaks we have to change, but most of the time it's fine. But I ask them, and I had a client just recently, and I asked him, what's in your trust? And he said, I have no idea. He's had this trust for 20 years. And I said, well, what are your bank account? How are your bank accounts titled? How is your deed titled? Does it say you're the trustee on any of those documents? Does it say your trust owns it? So we want to make sure your assets are properly titled, because again, we don't want to make sure, we want to make sure it's correct before it's too late. Another circumstance to consider, has your family situation changed? Has there been a marriage, a divorce, a birth, a death? What about other changes that might impact what you want to do? Let's think about that. Maybe something great has happened. Maybe our kids are growing up, they're getting married, they go to college, they're having kids of their own. They're wealthy, they don't need your money. Or maybe they've hit a tough patch, they go through a divorce. What if you discover one of your family members has a drug problem? And I say this, there's nothing to be ashamed about with it. Drug addiction does not discriminate. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. It doesn't matter your status. It doesn't matter your wealth. It doesn't matter what religion you are. It doesn't matter, period. Drug addiction, any problems with addiction, do not discriminate. But let's think about it and put a plan in place, because God forbid your loved one doesn't kick the habit. Rehab isn't working. What then? There's a terrible story that a client, I got involved after the parents died, but the parents had a decent amount of wealth and they had two kids. One was a drug addict, one wasn't. So they set up a remainder trust for the drug addict, which I agree with. However, they put a stipulation in there that that child was able to take an income distribution of $5,000 a month. I ended up working with the child who was not a drug addict down the road, who told me this story. And she said to me, what would you have recommended in this circumstance? Now, again, I don't know all the details, but I can tell you I would have a client sign a waiver stating that if you die and Johnny has a drug problem and you're okay with giving him $5,000 a month, do you know how many drugs $5,000 can buy that person? I'm assuming a lot, because Johnny overdosed 3 months after Mama died. I told you it's a terrible story. But the daughter asked me, what was that attorney thinking by allowing her to draft this? And I don't know what they were thinking, because I wasn't there. And I don't know what else impacted Mom's decision. But things like that matter. And they need to be addressed. What about changes in the law? There have been some drastic changes recently in federal state tax law. Not so much in state estate tax law. But over years, the laws change, and you can expect that these changes will continue over time. You have to keep an eye on that, or your attorney has to keep an eye on that. Tax law changes. What about the changes in how assets are owned? Tenancy by the entirety. Joint tenants with rights of survivorship. Joint account owners. Medicaid rules. All of these things impact our overall estate plan. I tell people it may not be necessary to review your estate plan like you would your financial plan every 6 months, every year. But it is imperative that we review it if you have a life event. Marriage, death, health, financial, drug addict. Any of those things. And it's my job to know when the law changes to notify you. But you should review your circumstances. You should know what you have. Take an inventory. Stay on top of these things. You've worked very hard for your stuff. I always tell people that. If you've worked so hard your whole life, why are you so casual with how it gets distributed when you die? Same thing for your pre-need, your funeral, prepaid funeral. Make your decisions if you want them. I always think it's best to help make the decisions as best you can before going and not leaving that burden on somebody else. But to each their own. People don't want to talk about it, but that's what we're here for. So if you have questions or concerns, please reach out to us, 724-784-0239. That's our job. And that's what we're good at, quite frankly. That's the end of our show today. Tune in next week. But until then, have a great weekend, everyone, and God bless. Take care.